cause a winner don't quit on themselves.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am guest host today, State Representative Evan Goyke. Maggie Dawn has some freedom today. She is out this week, a much-earned vacation for her. Maggie, I hope you are not listening. I hope your feet are up. I hope there's a tiny little umbrella on some cocktail on a beach somewhere and that you're enjoying your time off. Thank you for joining us. Again, my name is Evan Goyke. I'm a state representative from the city of Milwaukee. I've been able to be a guest on Maggie's show before, and I have a great lineup today. So I just want to introduce what the next 2 hours have in store. Right now, between the 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock hour, joined in studio by a friend and someone that I've really come to admire, Mr. Adam Procell. So we're going to talk to Adam in a minute. And then at 3 o'clock, I'm joined by one of my bosses, State Representative Greta Neubauer from Racine, who is the minority leader of the Assembly Caucus in Madison. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about what life is like now that the new maps are in place and what little preview for legislative assembly seats in November. And then to close out the show, we're going to have my friend Edgar Lynn, who's the executive director of a newer but very important organization here in Wisconsin called Protect Democracy, something that we all need to commit to doing. So Edgar's going to talk about the work that that organization is doing to ensure free and fair elections here in Wisconsin. So one of the things that I like most about Maggie and her show is that, she's an entertainer, but she's really an educator in many ways. She takes often complex legal issues or topics and breaks them down in a way that everyone can understand. And so I want to try to honor Maggie's educational spirit here at the top of the hour before I introduce Adam and we start talking at greater length about a system that we call reentry and within the criminal justice system. So just permit me a few minutes to talk a little bit about the criminal justice system in Wisconsin. Now, I used to work in this system as a lawyer. I graduated Marquette Law School in 2009. In my final year of law school, I was in the prosecutor's clinical for hundreds of hours, charging cases, trying cases, and then I became a public defender on the other side of the courtroom, defending and representing individuals that couldn't afford their own attorney when they were accused of crime. And the criminal justice system is pretty big. Listeners, you've watched Law & Order, you've seen CSI, and that's not reality whatsoever. So the landscape in Wisconsin, we have municipal courts at the local level. Those are money-only penalties where you don't have the right to a lawyer or to cross-examination, truncated rights. And then at the circuit court level where individuals can be charged by a crime, with a crime at the county level, those are the district attorneys that prosecute. You do have the right to counsel, the right to remain silent, the right to a trial, to confront your accusers in court. We have felonies and misdemeanors, all the way from a homicide case to shoplifting and everywhere in between. Tens of thousands of cases are charged and prosecuted in counties across the state. And then we have a unified statewide system called the Department of Corrections that operates facilities, institutions, prisons, work reentry centers across the state. And that's been a subject that I've worked a lot on in the state legislature, trying to make our criminal justice and correction system more effective and efficient and have the biggest return on investment possible. So that's where I wanted to, I just want to talk. We also in Wisconsin are what's called a truth in sentencing state, a determinant sentencing state. And what that means is an individual gets sentenced to prison, they have to serve the number of years that they get. And in combination with that, we have what's called bifurcated sentencing. Every time an individual is sentenced to prison, there's two parts of the sentence, a prison sentence and then a sentence on community supervision, what we would refer to time in and time out. And so today's dialogue is really going to center around the transition out of incarceration back into the community. How do we get it right? How do we get it wrong? We're going to talk about some really exciting stuff that's been happening in Madison that will be hitting the community soon. So keep that all in mind as reference, you know, as we start talking. I'm going to have Adam on for a while here today so that we can have a more in-depth conversation. It is an honor. But before I introduce Adam, just for everybody listening, we will take your calls, your texts. You can always comment on our feed. The number is 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. If you have questions, if you have concerns, feel free to dial in. But Adam, I want to introduce you. I'm going to have you introduce yourself a little bit. So we're joined today in the studio by Adam Procell, who's doing incredible work to ensure that that individuals that are coming home have a good opportunity to be successful. He and I are going to talk a little bit later about some of the most current project we're working on. But Adam, give everyone an introduction, who you are and what you're up to.
Hey, Evan. Thank you for having me today, Evan. I appreciate the opportunity. Yes, my name is Adam Procell. I wear a few different hats, so depending on the meeting, we'll determine the title I give. But
we want to hear all of them. We want to hear all of them today. We got time.
So first and foremost, I'm the interim director of Partners in Hope. We're a faith-based prisoner reintegration organization based out of Milwaukee. I'm an adjunct instructor for Marquette University, where we teach a reentry class where we take 10 Marquette students that have never been incarcerated into a prison to learn with incarcerated students. So that's pretty cool. I'm co-founder of a multidimensional consulting firm with my business friend and partner, Shannon Ross.
Shannon's not here today, right?
No, he decided to blow us off and think that he can do better things.
We did invite him, just so everybody understands. Shannon Ross.
If you see him in public, point your finger at him accusingly and just tell him what a terrible human being that he is.
Missed opportunity, Shannon. All right, we'll talk more about Shannon later. But anyway, keep going. This is great. And I do have some questions because I think we really need to unpack some of the stuff that you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. I'm also coordinator of what's called Home to Stay. It's essentially a once a month one-stop reentry shop where you bring in a lot of service providers to one space, and clients from the Department of Correction or Department of Community Corrections are sent there to receive those services. We have a youth program called Mirror, where we try to vividly reflect the lifestyle youth are living that are engaged with firearms. And we also have what we're starting to launch called MORE, so the Mobile Office of Reentry Education, where we're given an ambulance, believe it or not, of all things, from the fire department. We're going to convert that into a mobile office, and just like an ambulance triages life-saving measures, we're going to triage reentry saving measures when people get out. So we're going to literally take the resources to them, meet them where they are, literally.
All right, so you're busy.
Just a little bit.
All right. Tell us a little bit about, where does this passion come from? Where does this vision come from?
Yeah, as is with most passions, there's a lived experience component, and myself, is as hard as it is to talk about sometimes, I always try to be transparent. My business cards are literally transparent, as I try to have it with my past. And there's no way around it. I was incarcerated at 15, given a life sentence for a crime that took place 3 days after I turned 15 years old. And I would essentially grow up in the Wisconsin prison system, where I began as the youngest inmate in the adult prison system. And so it was along that journey that I realized that there's a lot of mistakes that people make in life, myself included, and I have no excuse for those mistakes. But if we want to get past that, knowing that 95% of the people that are incarcerated will one day come home, well, how do we want those people to be? If those people are your neighbors, how do we want them to be?
Yeah, so. I mean, first of all, I just want to acknowledge and applaud the work that you're doing to pay it forward. You know, it's hard. You know, I think many people listening, myself included, I can't even imagine what that would be like. And here you are. You've just explained the half dozen initiatives that you're in, and you're really taking your lived experience and ensuring, you know, you're really just paying back, and it's really inspiring to see that. And I think one of the things that why you've been so successful is because you have walked that path. That when you're talking to individuals, that, you know, it's not somebody from, you know, the outside flying in telling somebody how to conduct their life. You can really meet them where they're at. So I appreciate the honesty. I know it's not something that you want to talk about on the radio, but I want people to understand as they're listening to Adam, and just look, there's, when we're trying to take on change in systems like this, we need to talk to and listen to people with lived experience. They got firsthand experience with how the system works and doesn't work. And if they're not included in the conversation or the effort, that conversation or effort is just not going to go as far. So let me back up. Tell everybody a little bit more about that Marquette program, because I think somebody was listening and thought, so you're pairing kids that are at Marquette undergraduate and kids that are young adults in both systems, in college and currently incarcerated. Tell us a little bit more about that program.
Correct. Marquette has taken a leadership role in the educational space because we find that there's so many stats out there. And one of the most glaring is level of education in comparison to recidivism rate, which quite simply, the higher you go in school, the less likely you are to recidivate.
Okay, so just pause. Again, like this, I just want to make sure. So you're just saying, you know, there's some evidence to suggest that, you know, education and not necessarily getting the degree, just even going to the to education has a direct impact in reducing recidivism. And for listeners, recidivism is a hard to pronounce term that we talk about somebody that has committed a crime and whether or not they re-offend during a certain amount of time. And it's a really important metric that re-entry programs are often judged by the success. What is the recidivism rate? So sorry to cut you up.
Yeah, no problem. And so, yeah, and it doesn't have to be a degree, as you said, though there's stats based on just getting a high school equivalency diploma, an associate's degree, a vocational degree, a master's degree. And when you're at that master's degree level, you're almost at a 0% recidivism rate. And so it is paramount. So what Marquette has done, they've begun to offer free programming, free college classes to those that have been incarcerated formally and those that are currently incarcerated. And it's just about creating different classes where you can bring outside students or Milwaukee students, Milwaukee-based students into various correctional institutions to learn inside with those that are currently incarcerated.
I mean, I just think this is such a cool collaboration. Inside of a state prison, kids from college working with kids in college incarcerated. We're going to come back in just a little bit more with Adam Procell covering the landscape of re-entry in the state of Wisconsin. Thank you so much. Maggie Dawn Show, guest host Evan Goyke. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Evan Goyke, guest host for today, joined in studio by Adam Procell. We're talking about the landscape of the reentry system, individuals that are coming back to the community from a period of incarceration. Call or text 855-752-4842 or comment on the feed. Before we went to break, Adam, you provided a statistic, which is where I'd like to pick up our conversation. You said 95% of the individuals that are in our care in prisons in Wisconsin are going to come home. And so what Adam's referring to is this reality that most individuals that are in our correctional system, you know, they have a release date. They're going to come home and they're going to be released. I just hope that you could touch on a little bit what do you see and feel and hear from individuals that are reentering? What are some of the common experiences and stories that you hear? Go walk us through what that might be like.
Yeah, and it's a difficult conversation to have because there's so many things that are integral to one another. So many individuals think that all you have to do for somebody to get them on their feet is give them a job, and that's the cure-all. And it's one of the first things I say in our Partners in Hope organization is that if all we do is get you a job, we have failed you. Because from what I see firsthand is there's so many other things, whether it's having a place to lay your head, which sounds like, of course, you want a place to lay your head, but so many individuals that are getting out don't have a stable place or a safe place to live. And if you don't, how can you really concentrate on your education or getting signed up for healthcare because you have to have an address where stuff can be sent to you? So everything is intertwined. I think that's the number one lesson that I've learned. But I would say from a macro standpoint, the number one issue that we see probably is housing. And it's not necessarily just having a roof over your head, but it's having a place where you're not contributing to re-entering that same cycle of trauma. So there's lots of places to be that are in quote-unquote terrible neighborhoods where you just don't want to be around. And if that's what you're surrounded by, oftentimes that's what you're going to engage in. Not all the time, but so often.
Sure. It just, it makes some intuitive sense, especially if that's the community where the crime was committed that ended up in the prison sentence, putting the individual right back into that same block or same neighborhood is, may not lead to the greatest success. And you've just, you talk about that hierarchy of needs, and I think listeners can understand it's hard to hold down a job if you don't have a place to live. Or talk a little bit also beyond those kind of metrics of, education, job, and housing. What are some of the sometimes referred to as soft skills or that interpersonal transitions in how you work with individuals as they come home?
Yeah, one of the things that and it drives me crazy is the concept of no call, no show. So if you have an interview or a meeting or an appointment, and so often people will just set that appointment and then they won't tell you when they don't show up. And employers, they're not standing for that. And so when they do that to us, we really try to kind of, and I hate to use this word, beat it into them that this is so important. Like, it's not okay to no call, no show any sort of appointment. We try to teach that because eventually you're going to have that stable employment where they're going to require you to be there on time every day, and they're not going to take the excuses of whatever you may come up with.
Right. So you're really kind of working at that basic level about personal responsibility, and these are the kind of daily skills that are going to be necessary to hold that job and then to continue to build off of that. So talk a little bit about Partners in Hope. You referenced that. You're helping people get employment. Walk us through what you do. If an individual comes to Partners in Hope, they're newly released, what do you start? How do you begin? And how do you walk them through that process?
Absolutely. So, and we get referrals from Department of Corrections and the Federal Halfway House, and we offer a once a month reentry workshop. It's a week long, all day, and essentially the first thing that they hear from is somebody who has that lived experience, who has served decades in prison, who has their own job, their own car, their own house. And the reason why we do that is so often we create this excuse of why our record's going to make it impossible to succeed. So we want to immediately remove that excuse. So if you can see tangibly in front of you people who have done decades, 30, 40 years in prison, and now do own their own house, do own their own businesses, that's the very first thing we want them to see. We also, in the first session, highlight the victim's perspective, because a lot of people are reentering, that 95%, yeah, they are coming home, but almost all of them have created some sort of victim. And while we're all about second chances, we never want to forget of the people that we have harmed, because it's only until you can fully appreciate the people that you have harmed that you will never hurt those individuals again. So literally in the first session, I talk about my timeline, how I went through the prison system, but I also read my victim's father's statement from the moment he got the phone call from the Milwaukee Police Department saying that his son was shot. And we walk them through that as well so they can hear firsthand from a victim's perspective.
That's really powerful. You've always elevated that side and that voice in our work as we've worked together over the years and known each other. And I think that's really powerful. And those are, I think people, as they hear you describe this, it makes some sense. But, in the political world, in the legislative world, we don't often give that type of thoughtfulness, right? Get out, get a job, never go back, and these high expectations, and we don't really address the trauma and the people that are underneath it. And I imagine you have a lot of people where that's a really hard reality to confront.
It is. And I sometimes think you talk about the legislature, and because of my status, I went to prison having never been able to vote, and I'm serving a life sentence on parole, so I can never vote for the rest of my life. Wow. So I'm neither Democrat nor Republican. Sometimes I complain about that, but other times I'm kind of grateful because I don't have to attach to,
sure,
because we're each going to get, each side's going to get it right sometimes, each side's going to get it wrong sometimes. And there's some sort of middle ground that will allow us to be where we need to be. And I get it from a certain perspective of you do the time or you do the crime, you have to do the crime, and we can't be soft on criminals. And I 100% get that. I myself deserve to be in prison for most of my life. And I would understand if someone felt I should be in prison for my entire life. Is there some middle ground that I hope we can sort of meet at? Yes. But I definitely understand from both sides. But that's why much of my work, I try not to attach to either side. And then I try to attach on both sides, like bringing victims, raising their that awareness up, because we can't ever forget about that.
Yeah, no, it's one of the reasons why I wanted you to join today, and why we wanted to reserve a lot of time for this, is because it's a difficult conversation, and it does not take place in electoral politics ever, right? The criminal justice system has been weaponized at times by both political parties as a motivator to win an election. And I understand that. I'm somebody that's run for office, so I get that, you know, when you're running, you gotta say what you gotta, you know, you're trying to win, but it really prevents this type of depth. In my time, in 11 years being in the state legislature, it's been only a few times that we've had a really meaningful, deep conversation about crime, in really about victimization, about healing, about individuals. And I think what you're talking about, which I appreciate, is that's some baggage. It's heavy. And for you to be successful, you had to work through that. And I imagine it took some time. Am I right?
Correct. And there's times when I feel I still haven't worked through that baggage because of the guilt that I seemingly at times feel I've forgiven myself. But then other times when I look around at what I'm doing and just running myself into the ground because of work, because of that guilt, and trying to find a happy, healthy medium, it's not always easy.
No, I appreciate it. And we're all human. And we're gonna pivot now. When we come back after the break, I'm going to talk to Adam about a project that we worked on in Madison in the state legislature, a successful project, and how it's going to be the beginning of doing things differently as people reenter from the Department of Corrections in Wisconsin. Thank you for joining the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Evan Goyke, guest hosting for Maggie. Have you back in a few minutes. Thank you, everybody. Talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am guest host, State Representative Evan Goyke. Maggie is somewhere else, enjoying a much-earned break. I'm joined today in the studio by a friend, Adam Procell. If you've been listening, he's been sharing his journey and his story and the way that he's used his experience in his life to better his own community, our community, and our state. We're going to talk a little bit about how that advocacy has grown from, you know, the local community in Milwaukee to a new statewide effort. You can call, text your questions, 855-752-4242, or comment in the feed. If you're wondering, you know, we'll take questions about Shannon Ross, who was supposed to join us and who's not. Happy to give out his personal cell phone and email or anything else that you have about our former friend Shannon. But Adam and I are going to have, we're going to reconvene on Wednesday to celebrate, and we're going to cover why. Every other year, the Wisconsin State Legislature impanels an effort called the Legislative Council Study Committees. There's four or five different study committees, and this is a 16-member, some elected, some not elected, process. And the topics are voted on by a committee in the legislature, and then these 16 people spend the summer and fall kind of gathering evidence and coming up with model legislation to address the issue of the topic. And over my time in the legislature, I've served on six of these different issues. We've talked about drug and alcohol specialty courts and the bail and pretrial release systems. And 2 years ago, I had the honor of serving on a study committee that was looking at how we could increase success for individuals re-entering from our prison system. And we, you know, success was in part defined through employment, but also in part defined through what we talked about earlier, which is reducing the recidivism rate, ensuring that individuals that were in custody do not go back into custody because they're living safe, crime-free, prosperous lives. And so 16 people, we met, I don't know, six, seven, eight times. We had some, you know, again, legislators, some lawyers, some community members, a couple of individuals that had been in the system, some employers that were adding the employer perspective of hiring individuals. And so it was an interesting experience. And then we had this presentation from Adam Procell and Partners in Hope. So Adam, thank you for educating us back then. Walk us through a little bit about what you came to tell us about and teach this study committee in Madison.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting as I think back, because it was really employment focused. And I think back to the earlier comments in this interview where I tell our men and women that come through our reentry organization that if all we do for you is get you a job, we have failed you. And I think it was with that mindset, because I firmly believe that, not to say that a job isn't important, that's obviously not the case. It is extremely important. But when I presented that day, it was really, and it's, I think the name of what I was trying to get off the ground was called the Central Door, which is an acronym, the Department of Organized Reentry, where we'd essentially close a revolving door to incarceration and open the door to successful reintegration. And it was really just trying to highlight how, if you want to help individuals get jobs, for instance, how are they going to get to a job? Because right. One of the things that I see as boots on the ground is associations determine your destination. If you're trying to do the right thing, you want to get to work, and your only mode of transportation is to call that friend or cousin or brother that might have a pistol underneath the car, might have a bag of whatever underneath the seat. And you're like, man, I got to get to work. And you do, and you get pulled over. And all it took was that one time. So transportation is integral to getting somebody to a job safely. But people don't often put those in the same sentence.
Sure.
And the same thing as before with laying your head at a safe place. If you don't include that into the process of getting somebody a job, even though it has nothing to do technically with employment, if you don't look at that to address employment, we're just spinning in the circle. And so that's kind of why I wanted to focus. Let's stop looking at this answer through a straw, if you will, and really take a step back and look at how much of these things are tied to one another.
Yeah, and thank you. And you're right. You know, you remind us, and it's intuitive. We know you're right that if you don't have those other supports, just getting to and from the job or having a place to sleep, how can you expect somebody to maintain? And we have, unfortunately, big separations between the employment opportunities and oftentimes where people that are reentering live. And so how do you get, it may not look far away on a map, but they're, miles and miles apart, and bus routes may not be a great option, or maybe the employment opportunity is in the middle of the night and third shift. So you point out this, again, this kind of hierarchy of needs. And if we don't deal with some of the most foundational needs of a person as they come home, we're not going to see those higher achievements and outcomes. So you talk, there are services available for housing and transportation. And I think what you were teaching us about is how hard it is for somebody to say, let's say you come out of having been incarcerated for 5 years, you no longer have a valid driver's license, you don't have a permanent address. Where do you go on Monday? Which one do you do first? And how, and where do you sleep in between? And I think what your vision has been, I'll let you tell you. I don't want to tell people what your vision is. So you said the word Central Door, the acronym Central Door. Talk to us a little bit more about the idea of having these services under one central door.
Correct. And the easiest way to think about it is a one-stop shop, where if you have somebody who just did 43 years in prison, that's a long time. You think back 43 years and what was available to that person. Now they're out. They don't have a Social Security card. They don't have a birth certificate. They don't have a bank account. They don't have health care. So if we can put their supervision agent in this same place, underneath that same roof, where we know within 24 hours they're coming to meet with their agent, and if we make them walk through all the resources that they need, at least those first barriers, because everybody, I feel, I shouldn't say everybody, most people need long-term reentry support, where you have the Project Returns, the Partners in Hope, the Alma Center, these long-term reentry service providers. But those first initial barriers, where it doesn't take that long to sign up for your Social Security, it doesn't take that long to take your driver's permit, it doesn't take that long to sign up for a bank account. These initial barriers, if they were all under one roof, as we say, check all those off in an hour, now you at least start on a level playing field. And that's what I'm about is essentially it's a systems change and creating a process where we know every single person that returns into our county is starting off on the same leveling playing field, where they do have a bank account, where they do have healthcare, where they do have a place to live, whether it's an apartment where a landlord doesn't mind your criminal background, is it an emergency shelter? Just at least we have all those initial barriers checked off, and then we can work on the long term, getting employment, building resumes, and mentorship, because all of those are important as well. But there's short term and long term.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, people would come home and they have, let's say, six tasks to do, and they, getting help or resources to achieve those six, as you mentioned, healthcare, housing, driver's license. And this is true. We're talking about Milwaukee's reentry landscape, but this is largely true any part of the state. You know, it's a Tuesday night. You can come down and do the driver's license recovery clinical. And Saturday morning from 9 to 10 is the Medicaid sign-up clinic. And next Sunday, we have the dental, you know, and it's really fragmented. And it's really difficult for individuals to, as you're talking about, just kind of hit the ground running and check off some of those foundational necessary items. I mean, how many employers today are doing direct deposit or are handing, you know, some, you know, the paper check is fading away. And so, you know, you have a lot, or even that you need a bank account to deposit Correct. It in. So, you know, just focusing only on get the job. If you haven't addressed these other underlying items or needs, you know, we're not going to have the success that we hope. So, okay. So everybody's listening is like, yeah, Adam's, you know, it's not a genius idea.
No,
it seems kind of logical. We haven't been doing that in the government though. You know, it's a bit decentralized, frankly. So Adam comes to this committee and he's got this idea and he's talking about it as he's just talked to you. And there was a moment when Adam was talking in which a light bulb went off in, you know, the lawmakers in the room, especially a co-chair, Representative Michael Schraw from the Oshkosh area. And at talking to him after the committee, it was like this moment of clarity to say that we've got to do this. So I guess I don't want to put you on the spot, Adam. I should be on the spot about this, but the committee took Adam's idea and crafted a bill, an introduced legislation that called Reentry Center. So the bill, which was Senate Bill 172, requires the Department of Corrections to establish reentry centers first in Milwaukee, where the need is greatest and most concentrated, but beyond, you know, outstate as well. The state budget has some funds set aside in anticipation of this bill becoming law. Tell us a little bit more. Okay, I did the prompt and then I didn't even tell the best thing. So Wednesday, you and I in Madison, what's going on?
Some small minor thing happening that I'm not really completely aware of.
Governor Tony Evers will be signing this bill, Senate Bill 172, into law in the afternoon. It was a pleasure to work on the bill, bipartisan bill. I want to pause for a second and just reiterate what this is. Adam went to prison for a long time. He came out wanting to change the community, change the world, prevent other people. He had a good idea. He raised his hand and introduced that to legislators in this committee. Maybe the most shocking part of this story is legislators listened and actually worked together, introduced a law to create these reentry centers. It's being signed into law on Wednesday. It's a huge accomplishment. Thank you for all your hard work, and it's a good reminder that good things can happen if you work together and you work hard, and if you listen to people that know what they're talking about because they have some lived experience.
And I appreciate it more than you can ever understand. And I think back to that hearing where Representative Schraw was like, "Why aren't we doing this?" And for him to take up this idea, I'm more grateful to him than I can ever hope to repay. And then it's interesting because in prison, politics is in prison as well, even though we can't vote, and there's a stigma on either side from depending who you're having the conversation with. And a lot of times it's in prison, I should say, Republicans want to keep you in prison for as long as possible. And to have Schraw, who's a Republican, say, "Hey, this seems like an important idea. It humbled me. And then to have you say, hey, let's work together. And so my first, which is, it's weird in a good way, like my first foray into politics was seeing a Republican and a Democrat say, you know what, screw partisan politics. Here's a need. Let's work together. And to me, that was one of the most beautiful things, especially in today's divisive age, to see you and Shra work together and just constantly put up with my texts of, where are we at? Where are we at?
You should retire, man. You're batting 1,000. You should get out. I can't say that's been my experience on every bill that I've worked on. But no, it was really good. There was focus. We had some help in the Senate as well. People remained committed to getting to yes. We had to tweak the bill a little bit at the last minute, but it was all good. We got it done. And so as this goes into effect, what we're talking about is the creation of reentry centers where the nonprofit and government worlds will be partnering together under one roof. This is not something that will be housed in a big government block building, but out in the community where individuals that are returning from a period of incarceration will be able to walk through the front door and get those basic services all under one roof. And I think if you were listening to Adam, I think what you would hear is just how powerful and important those early victories are as an individual comes home, and what it would feel like in a 24, 48-hour period to start checking those boxes and looking forward. We're going to take a break in a second. Again, my name is Evan Goyke, guest host on the Maggie Dawn Show. Call or text or comment with your questions. Thank you for joining me and my good friend Adam Procell as we're talking about reentry and the reentry system in the state of Wisconsin.
The piano. She's riding in a taxi back to the kitchen, talking to the driver about his wife.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Once again, my name is Evan Goyke, state representative in the city of Milwaukee, guest host for Maggie, who is not working today, taking a much deserved break. Once again, you can call or text 855-752-4842 or comment in our live feed. You can ask questions of Adam or myself. He's going to take off shortly, but I'm going to stick around for the second hour and have some additional exciting guests to cover some different topics. We've been talking about the reentry landscape in Wisconsin, the criminal justice system, our Department of Corrections. At the outset, I gave a bit of a primer or overview of what the system looks like. I think what I failed to mention is just the scope and breadth. I mean, there are billions and billions of dollars in this system. The Department of Corrections has over 10,000 employees. I think it's a $1.7 billion, $1.5 billion a year. That's our money. That's our taxes. That's general purpose revenue, income tax, sales tax revenue that the state collects. And we're having a conversation about how the state can get more return on investment and how to make a more effective and efficient system. Last couple of questions for you, Adam, but I just want to remind folks, when we're talking about this isn't a project just to feel good about it. I mean, I certainly have felt good about working on this and working with you and others with the lived experience, but getting it right is a crime reduction strategy. A lower recidivism rate means less crime, means fewer victims. So we're really intentional about targeting people that are coming home, because if we get it right, we have a safer community. And I know, Adam, I want you to address a little bit about Partners in Hope and what you're doing with law enforcement, and give a sense. I mean, now that you've gone to Madison, your first time, you get a bill signed into law, you're going to retire, you know, let Shannon continue to drive to Madison and beg. I won't answer his calls anymore, obviously. Cool. So tell us a little bit more about Partners in Hope and the work you're doing.
Yeah, and to elaborate on the first part of early in this segment, I talked about what I did in the different areas, and sometimes it can get confusing. And I'll tell individuals, at its core, like at my base, I'm in the business of preventing tears from falling and preventing victims from being created. And that's really what we're hoping to do. It's not about being soft on crime. It's truly about, if we can give somebody a tangible way to lead a non-criminal lifestyle, by default, another victim will not be created. And so at Partners in Hope, for instance, we take a very different approach, and we work hand in hand with law enforcement, with Milwaukee Police Department. And the reason why we do that, because people are always like, well, why would police officers and the formerly incarcerated ever want to work together? But it's more of a it's subconscious. When people think of authority, they think of the badge. And if you don't respect the badge, you don't see the human behind the badge. It's just a little bit easier to go against what that authority, i.e. that human being, might be about. Sure. And so we...
And vice versa,
absolutely. And so we work really, really close with the Milwaukee Police Department and Chief Norman, and their officers are constantly coming down, having dinner with us, humanizing them, and we're able to see them in a different light, and they're able to see us in a different light. And last year, we took 10 police officers and 10 formerly incarcerated individuals, and we jumped out of a plane together. And it's really hard.
You did what?
We jumped out of a plane together, because I felt that if you're 10,000 feet in the air and that door of that plane opens, it's really hard to look at that human being and have any sort of ill will towards that person. And if you can not hate or dislike that person 10,000 feet in the air, when you're down on the ground, you don't need the smoke and mirrors of 10,000 feet. So it's possible to see one another as human, not as a badge or as a number. And if you can see that other person as a human, you know, the next time I'm pulled over, I'm not going to endanger that officer, or that officer is not going to endanger my life. We're going to see, we might not agree on the outcome, but we're both going to live. And that's what we hope to achieve.
It's really powerful. And it's similar to what you're doing with Marquette students, where, you know, you're this mixed class of individuals that are in custody and not, and it's really powerful. You can hear as you talk about your life's mission and the work that you do, how important it is for you to break those labels down and break those silos down and just reach the common humanity between people. And even in the context of forgiving yourself and having individuals really heal that trauma so that they can, you know, live a productive and happy and crime-free lifestyle. So I think it's really powerful here to hear you talk about it. It's a good reminder that you know, the government does important things. Passing this reentry center legislation will help, but that change is really inside individuals.
Absolutely.
Really on the inside. And so what we do is set up a structure and a system so that that internal change can happen. And you know, you're a huge part of it. So tell us a little bit, how can people get involved? I mean, you know, I'll also say, I know we have a lot of people that are listening that aren't in Milwaukee. This is not a Milwaukee only issue. All communities across the state have individuals coming home from incarceration. Most areas of the state have reentry organizations or nonprofits that working in this space. Some of the things that Partner in Hope are doing can be replicated. So how could people get involved?
Yeah, if your goal is truly to live in a safer society, it's really to take a look at what people were given. And some people just don't know how to deal with the trauma that they grew up with. And it's easy to just say, hey, you should have done better, do the crime, do the time, that sort of thing. I get it. But if people are going to get out, one of the best things that I can recommend is show them what success looks like. Take a mentee, become a mentor. I have multiple mentors, and I think I couldn't have learned what I had needed to learn if it were not for those people. And so that's one of the main things we do at Partners in Hope. And you can reach out to them at thecommunitywarehouse.org and sign up to be a mentor, or reach out to any of these other organizations in your area and just say, hey, I have some time. I want to show somebody that there is a better way. Like, you don't have to hurt somebody. And what we hear from our mentors all the time is they get so much more out of it than the mentee does.
And you have mentors that are, you know, you don't have to be involved in the criminal justice system. You don't have to be a cop or a lawyer or a judge or anything like that. So, you said you have a lot of mentors. You have people that are, I don't know, just tell us a little bit more about that. Just, you know, some of the folks that you lean on.
Yeah, we have everybody from police officers to lieutenant colonel in the army to some retired white guy from the suburbs, right? There really is no set idea of what a mentor should be, which is cool, because we're all come from different life circumstances, and sometimes we need to see somebody else from a different life circumstance to understand, okay, I didn't have all the answers, and so here's somebody that can help me.
I think it's powerful. I hope that for our listeners, you're hearing from Adam, become a mentor, get involved. This is an area that you can see incredible results. I've, you know, worked with a number of people that have been in the prison system, and to see the transformation and to be a small part of it is a really powerful experience for me. I can attest to what you just said, getting more out of it as a mentor, and so get involved. Adam, thank you for joining us today, for sharing your path, your journey. I'm proud of you. I'm proud to work with you. You're doing great work. Keep it up. Wisconsin is better for having you and your leadership. My name is Evan Goyke. Once again, thank you, Adam Procell. No thank you, Shannon Ross. Evan Goyke, guest host for the Maggie Dawn Show. I'll be next hour joined by Representative Greta Neubauer and my good friend Edgar Lynn.